Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.
Yeah. We got the vibe on deck, bro. Four dope brothers talking sports, so let's go. If you could just imagine some dudes into music get together to talk trash about whose teams is losing. So here we go. Deke Turner, John Lane, Trey Illy, Jay Hill, the MVP, courting the history. So now what? They got they mics and gizmos. Podcast rapper for DC, what it is, mo. Yeah.
Welcome to Sports and Things, a weekly podcast where we go in depth on sports and music topics of the week. Featuring John Lane, Trey Ely, Jay Hill, and host Dennis Turner.
And welcome to Sports and Things, everybody. I'm your host, Dennis Turner. I have with me, as always, Jay Hill, Trey Ely, and we are one down today. John is not, he's not with us right now. He'll be back next week. Like, so we, you know, he's taking some time with his family. So wish their brother the best.
Wait, John got fired?
What?
On his day off.
John got fired?
You got to Smokey. Be a stupid motherfucker to get fired on your day off.
Smokey. What happened? Nah, John's not fired. He's not relieved of duty. He just, you know, he'll be back next week. He'll be back next week. So let's get into, let me say, this is the podcast of musicians who talk sports. We love to talk sports. And with that being said, we're going to get into the first subject, which is, he just sent the text. John just sent the text. We're going to get into it, and it's going to be about a recap of last week. So last week, I'm going to give you the scores that we had for the Super Bowl. That's 55. John had 34-31 KC. I'm going to do the losers first. And Jay had Kansas City 38-31. The cool thing about this is everybody had 31.
You got the 31.
But it was the other team. Okay. Get 31.
You want to get technical as shit.
Trey had it 34-31 Tampa Bay, and I had it 35-30. Because the, you know, last week's episode was called, or the Super Bowl was called, how do you get to 30 and you kick 10-3 field goals? So,
and they tried to, they kicked three of them.
They kicked three.
Did you hear what Gronk said about
Gronk
them?
Said the only person that can score, he's like, they need to get him because the only person to score for them was the dude in the street.
At least he scored a touchdown.
Exactly. So the score was actually 31-39 in favor of Tampa Bay, which would make that Tom Brady's seventh Super Bowl and his fifth MVP.
Yeah.
He went.
Sounds right.
21 of 29. 201 yards, three touchdowns, two of which were to Gronkowski. I said he was saving those for the Super Bowl because he ain't really been doing much before the Super Bowl. He was just kind of like a presence in the locker room. Let me get you guys' take on what you thought you saw before we go into the halftime show of the halftime.
We got to talk about that.
Trey, go ahead. Just talk about the game.
All right. I can talk about the game. So,
it's about practice.
Yeah. So Tampa Bay's defense, first of all, played lights out. So shout out to Todd Bowles, former Redskin Super Bowl champion. Not under Dan Snyder though. But anyway, before Dan Snyder. So
what?
Todd Bowles when he won the Super Bowl.
I got you. It was no, it was like 87.
Yeah, it was back in the day. But anyway, the defense played well. They kept the Kansas City offense confused. I feel like Mahomes played better than his stats or the outcome showed because he wasn't getting any help. I mean, like, this dude is throwing passes literally horizontal, diving, hit the dude right in the face mask.
Right.
I mean, like, what do you want this man to do? And bloop, dropped. So he couldn't catch a break. Come to find out, he was injured because he had to go get toe surgery or something after right after the game anyway. And so, I mean, it just wasn't their year. I mean, two long seasons in a row. This is why you don't have a lot of back-to-back champs in the NFL. I mean, the NFL season is brutal. And they had the longest season you can have, two seasons in a row, because they won it last year. And then you factor in all the COVID crap that people had to deal with this year. They were just beat down, man. The Chiefs are done. But not to take anything away from Tampa Bay, because Tom Brady, that Tampa Bay team looked a lot like a New England Patriots team to me. And it says something to me about what Tom Brady brings to a team. And I'm saying offense and defense. I think that he just brings a certain culture and mindset to the organization where they play a certain way. Because a lot of those Patriots teams that was winning had these outstanding defenses. The defense is stepping up and playing well. And, you know, people, well, Tom Brady don't play defense. Man, it's something he's doing in that locker room and those huddles and the side. Like, because for some reason he leaves New England, he goes to Tampa Bay, and they look a lot like New England did with the defense kind of keeping them in the game. And even though Tom might have struggled at certain points, the defense kept them in there. And, you know, Tom, you know, his numbers don't necessarily look that great, but he made the key plays to win that game. And, you know, yeah, it. At the beginning of this season, I was saying, is it going to be, you know, this is a beautiful season to see, you know, was it Belichick or was it Brady? And it was, man, Brady. By a landslide, Brady.
I think it's crazy because it's too, like, if you watch it, like watching the game and watching Mahomes kind of like run for his life, I think it was like 22 hurries and two to three sacks, and he had two picks at the end of the game, and you know that's no touchdowns, two picks, no touchdowns, which is unlike anything
he's done in the last 4 years. He couldn't even run a touchdown in,
right?
He didn't even have that capability because they was fast. They was on him.
It's like they had it. They had the number, and it's like, you know, if you can't run your game plan and you can't change your game plan fast enough, like I said it the week before, when they're watching them play Tampa Bay play Green Bay, and like to watch them take that defense take that high powered offense and like hold them to what they held them to is like all they got to do is do the same thing against Kansas City. You know, they can't run the ball effectively, and if you can't run the ball, you can't do play action. Play action is 85% of what the NFL is now. If you can't run play action, you can't score, and you can't put the ball down the field. And like the first half, Brady looked like he was 20, like legit. He looked 20, 25 years old.
Yeah.
He looked like he was having a good time. And to piggyback on what Trey said, it's not just about his play. It's about his leadership. Like the way that he leads teams is like, I can have a bad day, but I'm going to motivate you guys to want to play past the bad day. And that's what they did this season. They just played past their bad days. Yeah. Jay?
I mean, that's the same thing. You know, I was thinking he would go for 300 and they was going to lose because the plan was Mahomes would do 5% of what he normally does. And he did do 5% of what he normally does, like Trey said, but I can't throw it and catch it. I can only throw it to you.
And some of those throws, man.
It was amazing. And even like they got audio of Tampa Bay, like, yo, he's a magician. He's a magician.
Yeah, I saw that.
And it's true. Like,
you see any of the still shots where he's like basically laying down and the ball is going, he's still throwing spirals on his back,
he's
basically.
Horizontal. I mean, he was throwing the sidearm throws. Like, he was doing his normal routine. But yeah, you got Kelce dropping shit. That's unusual. Like, it was weird because it was almost like you would have thought this was their first Super Bowl and they were playing with nerves. That's how it looked. It looked like they were too nervous. But I'll agree with Trey. It's the opposite. They were burnt out.
And we didn't address the elephant in the room. I don't think having a coach's son almost kill a child and all that stuff that was going on helped their situation.
Right. You have two ways to interpret that. Either we're going to win this for you, coach, or coach, your son did some fucked up shit. So I'm not even thinking straight right now about this out route, dude, because that's fucked up, coach. You know, it's not like it's some egregious or, I mean, not egregious, not like it's some misinterpreted action, you know what I mean? Like, well, he might be innocent, so we with you, coach. No, your son did some fucked up shit.
Yeah, so, and I don't know Andy Reid personally. None of us do.
Right.
But he's a human being, so I'll make some basic assumptions about him as a person. There is no possible way that
you can focus.
Your child went through that, and you're supposed to be focusing to prepare for a game, and it was not a distraction.
Mm-hmm.
I'm right. Like, yeah, how was he not at the police station that morning? You know, like Thursday, Friday morning,
right,
when it happened.
That's your son.
Right.
Like, and think about it. You need to be well rested so you can get up in the morning, watch film, game plan, do
none
whatever.
Of that happened. Right. None of that had to happen. None of
if that happened to your happened. Son, you're not gonna sleep good.
Yeah.
You know, just think about all the different like, things. Your son could be going to coaching. Jail for vehicular manslaughter or whatever charge he gonna get, and you
why coach? Like at the end of the day, you don't need, I mean, I know it's the biggest game of the year, but it's the game. We're talking about life versus game. Like, the game will be there. Like, your son might not be out.
And that'll be, I mean, to be honest with you, that'll be the narrative as to why Tampa Bay won. I know, like you said, that is the elephant in the room, but that'll be why. The only reason they wouldn't won because I wasn't focused.
The only dynasty.
I don't know about that. I don't know if I agree with that.
But, you know, there's a whole Kansas City base that's their logic. You have to think that's how they're thinking. Now we would have.
It had to impact Andy Reid. I mean, there's no way. I mean,
he ain't even run the normal plays that we normally run.
Does Andy Reid call the plays? He calls
no way.
No, Bieniemy. Really, Bieniemy is the one that really calls them. But you know, that whole setup is always kind of not questionable, but like weird to me. Like, the offensive coordinator calls the play. Can I veto the shit? As the coach,
I think the coach has an override play.
You know what
like, job is there that the guy above you can't say, exactly. Nah, never mind.
Exactly.
But
I don't think we should run it.
You guys watched the the speech that Aaron gave after the when he got the Super Bowl trophy. And he was like, I have to give it all to my coaches because I didn't do anything. Like, he didn't call the offensive plays for Tampa Bay.
I mean, Brian Leftwich did. It's a game, right? It's a game plan.
You know, so it's like it's my game plan. But like, I just kind of
got a lot right.
I oversee it. Like, I'm overseeing it.
He's got to do that. He's got to approve what they're doing. He's got to review it. He's got to meet with them. And then remember,
he's not calling the play by play.
He's got to manage the whole game.
Right.
And that's why it's good when the head coach is not calling plays, because if the head coach is focused on play calling, who is managing the game? Who's looking at situations and stuff like that? Like, yeah, this isn't going good. Maybe we need to change it. Oh, if we get a fourth down here, maybe we need to go for it. Like, who's thinking about the bigger picture of what's going on? Because if you're engrossed in something like calling plays, that's going to make you, you know, that's going to take you all your attention.
I know what I normally run on third down and three, so I don't know what y'all want to do, but this is what we going to do. No, I don't think that's a good idea in this situation, coach, because ball placement, you know, it's a lot of questions.
I mean, it's that, and then you got the analytics in there. So it's the offensive coordinators going back
that's
with analytics,
analytics,
and, you know, like, what works best in these situations. But see, that's the thing. I don't know if that scenario plays into the overall loss factor for.
They were missing pieces. That's the other thing, too. Like, they didn't have the linemen that they should have, or that they normally have, for him to even feel protected, even though he always breaks the pocket up regardless. Like, he's always a transitional quarterback, but it's a lot. If it happens a lot faster, it throws you off your game.
Watching Mahomes was like kind of like watching Randall Cunningham, like in
it
a
was.
Sense. It was like
it was.
He's running. And but Randall wasn't running for his life half the time. Nah, he was just running.
Right.
He looked graceful. But
that's how he is most of the time. But when you don't have your main pieces in front of you, you are running for your life every snap.
Yeah.
Because that's how they game planned it.
It's like no three step drop, no five step drop. Like, hack the ball, run in a circle, get the defenders off of you, and then throw the. He threw that one touch, that one in the end zone off his back foot.
And he should have caught that.
That would have been a different game probably if he caught that.
Because a whole different game.
It changes the chemistry. It changes how people react to that. Yeah. So yeah, question. Tampa Bay won. Brady said he's coming back next year. Do they repeat?
Repeating's hard, man.
That's not what I asked.
Plus, man, a full season with Taylor Heineke, man. Brady's not getting what? Past Heineke this time, man.
Jay, please.
Thank y'all for coming out. We'll be black next week.
What are you talking about?
Hey, out of all the quarterbacks that Brady played against in the playoff, which one gave him the most trouble?
I mean,
did Heineke play a full game?
I mean, he also didn't get to go up against Burrow. Just saying.
Or Ryan Leaf, if you want to go out there like that.
Just saying.
What is happening?
I don't think they repeat because, unlike basketball and LeBron and his Iron Man tactics, Brady, I mean, he old, but like you said, repeating, that's a lot different. Plus, they do have a really nice core, and that's everybody is going to stay together for the most part.
They keep that defense there,
run it back.
You add some other elements.
I don't think anybody wants to leave based on knowing that Brady wants to be there again for another season. It'd be different if he's unsure, then I'm going to look elsewhere and see if I can get some money somewhere else.
Right.
But if he's coming back, I'll be back. And then I'll try to get my money after that season. Right.
Yeah, he already said it. So it's like,
because after the Super Bowl, everybody gets greedy. Dog, yeah. I'm like the top safety. You see what you saw I did in the Super Bowl? Give me that money. No, you aren't. But, you know, I'll run it back with Tom. Yeah.
But I think at the end of it is like you're looking at a dude who out of 10 championships won 7, and out of 10 championships, he was the MVP for 5. Whether he earned those or not, mm-hmm. That's cool. You know, you can argue, you can debate that if you want to. But he seems to be, if not the main ingredient, one of the key ingredients to having a championship fold in your franchise. Mm-hmm. So why would you – I mean, if they already have the formula in place for them to get into the playoffs, why not?
Ain't nothing to change.
I mean, I think the only difference between like NBA and the NFL is that it's one game and it's a game of inches. So it can really come down to one play.
But it's also a game of injuries.
Very much so.
You get hurt in week 15 and you gone for the rest of the season.
Right. And Brady's about to be 44. So if he gets hurt,
exactly,
he might be done. So, mm-hmm. All right, Trey, did you give your assessment of a repeat?
Yeah, he said he's not getting past Heineke.
Oh, that's right. You did say that. Never mind.
Moving on.
Ah, okay. NBA. Steph Curry has been making, turning heads, rather, I should say, which shouldn't be the case because he's still Steph Curry. I mean, barring injuries and all the stuff that he had the last couple of years. But the argument now is, does he make the case that he is back to his old ways and is in the MVP running again? Jay here.
And I have to say yes, but I don't want to say yes. He's changed the structure of the game so much. That was weird, wasn't it? Did you hear that?
You heard it? Yeah.
Okay. I didn't know that was me or not. Was that?
Yeah, did I whistle? Know was. Something near the mic.
It may be me.
That wasn't me.
But
that's why we won't get best sound in podcast.
But I think he's changed the entire culture of the game. Not that he's like invented some shit, but it's just really weird that now everything is a three. And like Charles Barkley said, you make it, you win. You miss it, you lose. That's a dumbass strategy, but
live by three.
That's kind of how the games work. If you make it, you win. So,
but the other night he had 32 and he only shot.
His efficiency is what's fucking stupid.
Right, because like, he didn't shoot a bunch of threes. He made 4 threes, and he had 32 points.
Yeah.
That number that don't add up to 32
at all. His efficiency is remarkable. So that's the only reason why he really should be in an MVP conversation, because he can affect the game. He's barely played. What are they saying? He's barely played like 4 minutes in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, he's not playing the fourth quarter though.
Like he's doing this shit in three quarters.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And then sitting.
Yeah. That's crazy. Like, I mean, that's very good because your body definitely gets a break. So
he's like 32 now, right?
Yep.
But he doesn't look it. I mean in terms of like baby what face. He looks like.
Babyface assassin.
Health and nutrition and sports and like the way they take care of bodies, like medicine,
right.
Different. It's a different ball different. Game. Players are playing well into their 40s now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, LeBron in that class might be the first class that goes past 40 mm-hmm. and still looks like they're like in their 20s. Like it's looking mm-hmm. like that's going to be the case.
Like it's going to be some stats soon where you're going to be like, this is the most top 10 scoring leaders we had over 40. Some shit like that soon.
Right. Right. Because before it was like Steve 30. Nash and.
Yep.
Dirk, and that was pretty much it.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Now it's like you got a whole class of athletes.
Vince Carter wasn't even really killing it. He was probably averaging 18, maybe 15.
And then he was, you know, he had flashes of looking
role player, right?
Looking like the
28.
But I think Steph is well, Trey, let me get your point.
I think Steph is back. Like I think he's we were talking about earlier in pre-production that Steph, before he went out on that injury, I think he's been playing injured for some time. And I think it started sometime around when KD was there. I think he's been playing injured for a little while. And he looks refreshed. He looks more like himself. His numbers, everything looks back. I think he's back. So I think that Steph is going for another run.
With that team?
Greatness. When I say run, I mean as far as his personal performance.
Oh, okay.
I don't know about
championships. I mean, they're 13 and 12, right?
I don't know if Kelly Oubre is going to take them to the promised land right now. But
he's starting to hit his stride too.
Yeah, he looked good the last couple games, man.
It's consistency, like, though.
And does that consistency like bleed into everybody else's? Like the thing I read was like Steph Curry's work ethic is kind of like infectious. Like he's working, he's showing up, he's working. So if that becomes the culture that he establishes there, how are these players not going to get better? And then how are they not? I mean, I think they make a playoff run. How far they get in the playoffs is debatable, but they're definitely going to make a playoff run, right? And if they are all in sync and playing well, I don't think they come out of the West just because the Lakers are still there, but I think they get to the Western Conference Finals. Based on the other teams that they would have to go through to get to the Lakers, I don't think they have enough answers for the Lakers in terms of like their front court.
Of course,
you know, but like it'd be like Cavs, Warriors, a couple years ago, like you know, and if he's playing like he did in 2015, 2016, that's going to make it like a 7-game series between those two, like, and that's when it becomes kind of scary because he can put a team on his back. I just don't think they have enough answers for everything that the Lakers have to get past them. But, like, Portland, Phoenix, you start naming teams that are, like, looking good now, and then you put this version of Steph Curry up against those teams, he blows through them. I mean, he's not playing in the fourth quarter. Like, period. He's not playing at all. So, it's weird. It's I think, you know, out of the top ones, they're talking about MVP, like Embiid now. You have to throw Steph Curry in there because of how he's just
affecting
playing. Yeah, wins. He's affecting the game. Affecting
But just wins. Like him not playing in the fourth quarter, that's starting to sound a lot back like his old days.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, no,
he
yeah,
would
I agree.
Do what he needed to do, and he could rest in the fourth quarter because he had already done it.
Yep, we got this one. I think if because you got to also remember Oubre was the only piece that was holding him down. And now if he's consistent,
yeah,
we're
that,
good.
That's
we're good.
That statement you just made is a lot heavier than it sounds, though. Like he was like an anvil.
He really
was. I want Oubre to be good here. Like I thought he was a piece here.
He's got a lot of potential, man. Like I did want to see him do good because he looked like somebody who was going to be good.
Well, as my musical father used to tell me, potential ain't shit. Like it sounds nice, but if you ain't doing nothing with it, but he's working. Like legit, he's working. Like he had a couple good games and he's working. I think that, you know, that space between him and Steph is going to build. And then when they add Clay back, you know, we'll be having a different conversation next year. Moving on. Dallas Mavericks have stopped playing the national anthem before home games at the – oh, we taking a break?
No, no, no. Go ahead.
Oh, oh at the what's the word I want to use? Well, Mark Cuban says no more national anthems at the home games.
Update. Now he is playing the national anthem again.
God damn it. So this segment's done.
I mean, the league sent out a memo and said, "No, nah, we're not having none of that."
Quickly,
but
we're not having none of that.
The article I just read was like he did that before,
right?
He had a conversation with the before.
So I guess they went several games without doing it. Nobody really picked up on it, like it wasn't a story, and then it became
when it became a story. There's like, wait a minute,
Mavericks ain't playing the anthem. And Silver's like, what? Hold on a minute.
That's a bad play though.
Let me send this to Silver.
Let me send this.
That ain't gonna go.
But again,
well,
if it wasn't public knowledge, if it wasn't in the papers,
gotcha.
Silver don't care. But now that it's like, yo, should we even be playing the anthem? All right, let's just stop this before it gets out of hand. Now every team should play the anthem. There, let's go. Moving on.
let me get your thoughts on the national anthem being played. Anyway,
I mean,
so
yeah, you said back.
No, the anthem, I think it should be played. I mean, it's tradition, it's the country we live in, it's everything's the national. I mean, it's a every league is based on being in the United States in their name. You know, whether it's the National League, the National Football League, the, you know, whatever. Baseball has Major League, American League. And then to take it out, the message you're sending, like, I'm definitely okay with the, you know, the kneeling and the different signs of solidarity to show that the country needs work. Obviously the country does, but to take it out completely.
So
at this point, I think you're helping make the argument for the people who are against all of the solidarity things, because now you're really just jumping out off the boat. You know what I mean?
Go ahead, Dre. Go ahead.
There was a poll that was recently released that says 67% of people, not Dallas fans, not Wizards fans, 67% of people don't want the anthem played. That's a high percentage. 67%.
It's more than 50.
Should the national anthem, but the question was, should the anthem be played at sporting events, not basketball, not football solely, not baseball? Should it be played at sporting events? 67% of people said no. That's a lot.
And see, here's the thing.
I'm curious about that survey, because based on the number of people, and I don't want to make this a political podcast, but based on the number of people who are in the camp that was advocating everyone should stand and honor the flag during the play, the uh-huh. anthem.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where that poll was taken. I would be curious to see the details of how that poll was created,
right?
Because it feels like that poll may have been taken somewhere where there's more of one crowd than the other, because there's a lot of people who are advocating for you to, you know,
respect the
yes, yes,
the colors and the flag.
That number could very well be skewed. Yeah,
like the metropolitan or more urban.
Yeah, I mean, if you did the poll in New York City, and so you didn't take into account the rural parts of the country and all that kind of stuff, yes, it's going to be extremely skewed.
Yeah, but 67% is a lot to, like,
if you took it in New York City, it's not a lot now.
Right.
It should be almost 100% if you took it in New York City.
It's a lot more diverse. 100%.
Right. We don't want to hear that shit.
But if you take it in the middle of, I don't know the name of this place. Yeah, the places that I can't even think the name of.
Minnesota?
Somewhere out there. I can name the states. I definitely can't name the cities.
Indiana? Hoosier Town?
Yeah. Texas? In different various states in the middle of the country.
Yeah.
And not in the big cities.
I would see that being opposite. 67% then yes.
That, yeah, it flips completely the other way.
But so, here's my question. So I think we all think that number's kind of skewed based on where they took it. We don't know for sure. You'll find out where it came from eventually. But the question I would ask is, do you think that the national anthem is a fair representation of where we are as Americans? It's based on when the song was written and what the song means. We're all musicians, right? So based on what the song means and what it represents, it doesn't represent
everyone.
Americans in totality, right? Like it was written.
Right.
So maybe.
So I've heard about this second verse that no one ever sings or something that's supposed to be really bad, but I don't know, right?
Let's see.
yeah, there's allegedly a second verse.
I don't want to look up this verse and it'd be like, oh, say slavery. Like, wait.
Yeah. So I don't know. Like, if you hear people complain about something, then you go look at it yourself and you go, oh, I don't see it. But I don't know.
It's context.
I haven't looked into time. It myself.
I mean, we're in, as we know, cancel culture. So that's not acceptable
now. I don't know. So I'm not saying that.
Acceptable now.
Yeah, I'm not saying that with any credibility or anything, like just trying to say, you know, that it is bad. I'm just saying that I've heard someone complain
about it. I mean, I think there will never, I don't even know what kind of outcry it would take, but there's no way we're ever getting a new anthem or any sort of rewrite. I mean, not to say it's impossible. It's just, it would just take a heavily, like, even legislated effort.
Well, let's be, because they're
trying to
honest.
Introduce the Black national anthem. You know, you get that at certain, like, you know, games, but even that's
hard. And
there's
a crowd that doesn't really like that either.
Exactly.
It's only one nation. There's no Black nation, and there's no, well, you guys are the ones that started segregation. But again, I don't want this to be political. So anyway, the thing about it is, the anthem itself is not bad if the values in it are true for everyone, because it's saying very good things. It's just one of the challenges that we have is that, you know, people don't feel like it's representing them. Is it really free for me? Is it really, you know, all the thing, you know, am I being represented by this anthem, or is it just a certain group? So, you know.
Well, if you go into the third, fourth, and fifth verse, it's not. But if you stay on the first verse, it can be, because it's broad, right? It's a broad, like, especially now, like,
somebody looked it up apparently.
Oh yeah, they, and it's like, wait a minute, what are they talking about?
Say, does the shucking and jiving,
but it was it was written like realistically it was written in 1814.
Yep.
So the values of a person in 1814 are not going to be the same reflect. Values as somebody in 2021.
Right.
You're not going to change the song. You're not going to adapt it to. Mm-hmm. It's not one of those songs that we talk about timeless music all the time. Like, we always have a like inside conversation about timeless music. This ain't one of those songs. This is not a timeless music song. This is like a period piece. And they just, in terms of like what it's supposed to represent, is unity amongst Americans.
Unity.
We get all of that. But do you change the lyrics to fit what the current state of the United States represents now? Because back then, there weren't, everybody that's here now wasn't there then. And dare I say that people had different roles, without getting too political, back then.
Yeah, society was different.
Does that bus it challenge way?
Yeah, the remix we want, not the remix we want at all.
I mean, I listen to it.
Oh hell no!
Is it break time yet?
You hit Nelly in the background of your stop. Check it out about it. Like, oh wait,
what?
Whoa! Hey, put the kids to bed.
Here comes the Laker girls. What's no. So yeah, I don't know. It's I would be interested to see where that poll came from and see how many people they polled from where they were polled. I'm kind of indifferent, like. it's not like I'm sticking around for it. Like, I respect it. I'll stand up if I'm in the audience. Like, I'm not going to stand up in my house and while they're doing the, you know, national anthem. But I will respect it because it's not just about, it's about the people who serve and protect this country. Mm. And that's, you know, if you take it for that purpose alone and you just say, okay, regardless of when it was written and what it meant when it was written, this is what it stands for now.
Because, see, that's the thing, too. Like, just because you change it at sporting events don't mean the U.S. military going to change it. So then that's why it's going to be a heavily legislated effort if any sort of alteration or change happens, which is not at all in the cards.
Right. So, I mean, I don't know. I think that poll, it would do some justice to actually look into it and see who was actually polled, how many people amongst the millions of people that on in the United States actually do care about that the national anthem being played at the beginning of sporting events. Outside of the Super Bowl and like the NBA Finals, I don't think people really, they don't really show it on the TV unless somebody's famous is singing. Like, you don't really see it. You know what I'm saying? Like, so, you see, if you watch an NBA, you see Ernie, you see Charles, and you see all them, and then you see tip-off. You don't see the national anthem.
I mean, and I definitely want to clarify my statement. Like, I think leaving it in there.
But bust it?
What I'm saying it. Oh, not that one. That doesn't require any clarification. Taking it, I'm more concerned about the statement it makes if you take it out than the actual song, right? I'm not like, oh, we're going to miss the song so much. No, it's the actual statement. Like, we're starting to remove, you know, American pomp and circumstance from our proceedings.
Taking away apple pie? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. I mean, essentially, you're. So,
who don't like apple pie?
people can be, you know, start to interpret that as, you know, you are distancing yourself or separating yourself from American culture, and just that message won't be heard.
But
correctly.
Trey, what if is they American misunderstood? Culture?
If what they is misunderstood, American
culture? That's the question.
If you break down the history of American history and culture, some people.
But if they couldn't understand a dude kneeling just to make a statement, they definitely, like, that's just not gonna,
again,
it's not gonna unify people. It's not gonna bring people together. Uh-huh. That's not gonna help the situation.
Think about how they now include Canada's include Canada's anthem for the, you know, Canadian
when they play
teams,
yeah
hockey and you know NBA. So right. I mean, it's like, yep. All right, that's a country-based thing more so than a value.
Even better, when they do the Olympics, they play everybody's.
Everybody.
Yeah. Everybody gets a time to sign. Yep. But everybody doesn't have the same history as America.
Bingo.
So.
I mean, there's a lot of places in the world that have some bad history. I mean, like, the world is not the best place. So,
I mean, yeah, without getting
too political. It's bad things happen all over the world.
It's a small world.
I think this episode is going to be called Without Getting Too Political. Without getting too political.
We won't have a rights for that. Never
mind. Yeah, don't do that. Like, without getting too political, I would agree with Trey because I remember being in Rwanda and going to a museum and seeing genocide everywhere. Like, it was a museum of genocide. And it was like, oh, it was here in this year. It was here in this century. It's like every place had, like, this country or this our society was founded on war. And like the have and have nots.
Makes money.
Without getting too political. we're gonna take a break.
Sports and things and politics.
We'll be back after this break. Stay posted.
Yo, this is Dennis from Sports and Things, and I have some exciting news to share with you guys. We recently partnered with FuboTV. Now you might ask, what is FuboTV? FuboTV brings you 100 plus channels, including NBC, CBS, Fox, ABC, ESPN, and more without the hassle of a cable contract. And I know everybody wants to get out of those cable contracts, for sure. Don't believe me? Click the link in our bio and start your free 7-day trial now. And now back to Sports and Things.
And welcome back to Sports Things, everybody. We want to get right into our next subject, which is the NBA Are we continuing? Yeah, we're continuing in the NBA. The Wizards are 2-12 without when Westbrook plays, and they're 4-3 when he doesn't.
A little bit less trash.
There's a lot of speculation about Bradley Beal jumping ship, but his people say that he's here for the long haul. He doesn't want to like leave and, you know, be that player that kind of just runs to the next team or the next contender. So the question I have for you guys is two part. Does Bradley Beal trust the process? And secondly, what is it going to take for them to get on a winning path? Like, rebuild. We lost Thomas Bryant, which I don't really
think was a key component, is what you're saying? Okay.
Yeah, like, what key components would it take? What would they have to bring in to make them contenders on a nightly basis? Not even playoff contenders, just contenders on a nightly basis.
We need that attitude player. We need at least one,
like a Jimmy Butler,
maybe more.
Here's the thing. I think we need a big man, really.
I think we have the
attitude player. I just don't think his game is translating well.
Who is that?
Russ.
Russ is injured, man.
But his attitude. You just said attitude. We have the attitude.
Yeah.
Russ is ready to run through fire, but he's missing layups.
We needed the defensive end, the kind of the power forward center kind of guy that's ready to, you know, makes people scared.
We need a new coach, like period, point blank. It's not the personnel, but I mean, even outside of the memes, it really is having to do with personnel, because case in point, this Friday, they will be without Bill, and only Westbrook will be the alpha. So now we really get to see, because Bill has not been out except for COVID protocol.
Are you watching that game now?
I didn't say that. I'm just saying, like, we'll know what the stats look like. We'll know what the stats look like. I'll watch the game for 2.5 quarters and know that they're in it, and then they just crash and burn in the fourth, or vice versa. Like, they crash and burn in the third, and then it's like, let's try to play catch up in the fourth.
Well, like, historically, Wizards teams have been in it until 10 minutes into the third quarter.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
So, and then it just kind of goes to shit.
But you're really going to see a whole different game plan with no Beal out there. Like, will Russ really take 30 shots, or will he get a triple double where he's got 15 assists? You know what I mean? But it also takes other people making their shots, which is also a huge question mark.
Trey?
Fire Scott Brooks, man. Just fire Scott Brooks.
But realistically, that's not going to happen this season, right?
I think it's going to happen after the season.
No, I think it could happen.
So what do you do?
I think it could happen during this season, to be honest with you. I think as much as we don't want that transition to start, I don't understand. Like, it's a 50-50 argument as to why you do it in the off season. Why not do
it
during
the
season?
You want to get an early start on the new coach finding process. Because if you got a coach like Scott Brooks is on the last year of his contract, and they haven't extended him, and right now things look terrible. Like, the likelihood of him getting an extension, like, what?
It would be that Marvin Lewis type shit. Why are we keeping this dude again? Wait, why? He's getting another year? Okay. But why? Nothing.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, it just doesn't make sense. How is Scott Brooks here next year? Like, how? And so the question is, does he make it to the end of the year, or does he get released early so that they can get a jump on the next coach? Because if you're the first team in the market, you're the first team that gets to talk to whoever the hot prospect is. Mm-hmm. You know, so
you got to sell, like, should I come to your train wreck or not? Because your ship has a lot of holes in it.
But if you give them if you give them all the keys to the building and say, it's now your shipwreck, manage it how you see fit. Like, at the end of the day, Scott Brooks is a bad coach here. But he hasn't been a bad coach in the NBA. He's won more games than he's lost. He's over 500. He's 492 wins and 390 losses. So, and he had a pretty successful run in Oklahoma. So it's like,
yeah, he did
with Westbrook. So it's like, it's not like he's a really bad coach. Maybe.
But no contract extension is going to happen in these
circumstances.
But here's
the thing, though. He's what's happened is with any team, which is what was so strange with Marvin Lewis, you've lost the players, dude. Like, you've lost the players.
Right.
And so, I mean, in basketball, I feel like it's even more close-knit than football with a 52-man roster or whatever it is. Like, that's a lot of people to manage. But 15? Come on, man. Once you lose 8 of them, we need a new coach. Okay, we might want to start thinking about getting a new control guy in here, because 8 of these people ain't really feeling him anymore. That's a damn high number. Like, 2 people you can talk about trading them, but when it's like half the team,
right.
And I'm not saying that that's what it is, but that's how it looks. That's the optics of it. You don't have control of this team. They just really out there. Yo, when's our next game? All right, I'll see y'all at the gym. Like, we ain't really running nothing that works.
And realistically, like, his first 2 seasons here weren't losing seasons. They were right around 50 games, you know, close to 50 games his first 2 seasons. It's been the last 2 you take out this year, because they're 6-16 right now. But, like, you take out the last 2, and that's the when it's like, is he losing the team?
But, Dennis, what I say to you is based on the current circumstances. Uh-huh. His contract is coming to an end. And so for him to be back next year, he will have to have had an extension or a new contract.
You don't see him getting a new contract.
Based on the current circumstances, do you see
that? Not with Washington, no. Right.
I don't.
Not with Washington.
Yeah, with Washington.
He can be assisted somewhere else. Just like,
this is not how you want your contract year or year before your contract year or any of that to go.
Exactly.
This is not how you want it to go.
But you have to think, too, like, he lost the key element to his offense and defense with John Wall.
All right, so
I'm gonna put a checkpoint on that subject. We're done. We're done with that one. Let's move on to another franchise that I don't care about. Philadelphia 76ers. Argument is here is like, can a coach can come into your franchise and change the overall culture of your winning pedigree? Because
you mean Rivera? Oh, sorry, my bad. Go ahead.
What?
Or Doc Rivers, or whoever Scott Brooks' successor will be.
We're talking about Philly, so we're talking specifically about Doc Rivers. Doc Rivers,
all right,
has made Philly into, dare I say, a powerhouse, because I don't know if that team gets out of the East with the Nets there personally, but they're playing well. They're in the top 5 of the power rankings. Embiid is playing like a certified center. Tobias is shooting out the gym, and Ben Simmons is points per game are down. I think he's averaging like 13.9 a game, but he's becoming the player that I think most people thought he would be, which is like a slasher, but also a facilitator who can change a game. He's a game changer, right?
Without shooting a jump shot.
Without him shooting at all.
Right.
Doc Rivers said he doesn't have to shoot the ball at all. He can take 10 threes. He can take no shots.
No threes, right.
Yeah, he can take 10 threes, no threes.
Yeah.
He won't have to shoot the ball at all. He's getting like almost 3 to 4 steals a game, maybe 3 blocks a game. Like, he's affecting the ball, and he's affecting the flow of the game.
Exactly.
Question is Doc Rivers the piece they need to get to the next level, or was he the piece they needed to get to past the Eastern Conference Finals into the actual finals? Jay.
Yes, because it goes begins again. We can go full circle and go back to Brooks. It's the game plan. It's the players.
Oh, Casey.
I'm not buying into I'm not buying into your bullshit. Right. So, I mean, it's just a matter of we've tried all of this other stuff. It has not worked. Let's see what he's got to say. Let's see if we run it and it works. Then hell yeah, we'll keep running it. So I think it really does turn into, yo, this dude is on something. Like, he's been watching us. He knows our, like, he knows our capabilities to where if I stay over here and that man stay over there and I cut and this and we can end up with the two, shit. It's not like it's rocket science. That's the thing. It's not like it's rocket science. It's literally like you set a screen, you cut. If he's open, you hit him. If he's not, you don't. You shoot it if your man drops off. It's real simple shit. It's just right. A matter of knowing who can run what. So I think, yeah, Doc was that piece. Like, I feel like same thing if Popovich went anywhere. He could get some motherfuckers over 500. Would they win a chip? I don't know. But he can definitely get you over 500
right.
to compete. And we know Doc is no slouch by Boston.
By the Clippers.
Yeah, all of it. All of it. But, you know.
Trey?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think Doc is the key. You know, like, that's a major change. I mean, they did pick up some solid role players. So, I mean, they added some contributors. But I think the orchestrator is the key deal of what's going on there.
I hate to say it because I mean, nothing against Philly, like the town of Philly.
Everything against
Pennsylvania. Oh, nothing.
Oh, not the town. Of all their sports teams, though. Everything against all their sports teams.
Well, in the NFC East here and they're in the Eastern Conference. So we natural rivals, right? Like we have a natural thing with them. I just never really got the hype behind some of the players that they had on that squad. I think
why
that
is he
they
saying some of the players, Trey. Why is he saying some of them?
He's saying Joel Embiid.
Right. Why is he? That's not his name. It's not some of the players. His name is Joel Embiid.
Fair enough.
I just don't get the hype between some of Joel. The Joel Embiid. Some
but
of
no,
the Joel Embiid players.
At some point, it was Ben Simmons too. Like Ben Simmons was like touted was, as yeah, like the next LeBron.
He was regarded as the next shit.
But he can't shoot. Like,
yeah,
LeBron couldn't shoot, but LeBron put up 27 points a game.
Ben when he Simmons came in. Is the fresh
he was
prince.
A prince. Yeah, he was a prince.
Yeah, no, it was all yeah. that. Yeah.
So like, yeah. It was that narrative because you know, don't forget, like a couple years ago, they were talking about breaking this team up and like, can they even play together? Like, can you win can you even get far in the playoffs with Embiid and Simmons on the floor together?
And then they gave out massive money.
Right.
Here y'all go.
Hulu.
Yeah.
Hulu loves sports.
Sixers have live sports. Oh, okay. 76ers have live sports.
But you add some pieces. You add Seth. You add, I mean, Tobias has been shooting lights out. You know, you add some pieces to that.
Did you see the article I sent about Seth?
Yeah, I'm saying Seth's been balling,
that dude
man.
Dude is going to be fit. He's close to being
50-50-100.
He's about 50,
to break a record.
50-50-100. I mean, that's jinxing right there. He's going to miss a free throw now.
From the 3-point
he's shooting 100. He's shooting 100% from the free throw line. Come on now. I mean, you will miss. You're going to be at 98. But I digress.
He's a bucket. Yeah. Like he's a bucket.
Is. He really is.
And it's like, is he that much of a bucket because of the shine that his brother get? It, you know, it's a storyline there. Like I've been overlooked. Yeah, I've been overlooked. You know, my dad was a shooter. My brother's a shooter.
Yeah, I don't think he was overlooked. I just think.
But he's been traded a couple times.
He's on different. Yeah, but
if you get traded, you're being overlooked.
No, if you get traded, your value is both ways. I know what you're saying. Like you're not overlooked.
It depends on what you're getting traded for.
Exactly.
Right, you're getting traded for makes it look like either you're valuable to them or you're not. Yep. You know what
I'm saying? I think somebody did trade him like some M&Ms, so he may not be as valuable as, you know, he comes off like Steph, but.
You like the M&M nobody sucked the coating off of. It's like, oh, look.
Pause. Trey face. All right.
Anyway, so, you know, Wait, let me get my thoughts together. Doc Rivers has won a championship, went to L.A., put together a team. Well, was he the GM in L.A.? I think he was the GM. I'm not 100% sure.
I think he was.
Either way, he got those guys to play together. And for a couple years, L.A. Clippers looked like they were going to make a run until injuries plagued them between Chris Paul and Blake Griffin. Until
they blew a 3-1 lead.
Well, injuries, bro. Like, come on, don't do that.
Injured feelings.
Wow. And then he goes to Philly, and they are already in the conversation about being one of the best teams in the East. But they were in that conversation the last couple of years, too. Like, that's not a new conversation for them. Now it's like your players that were questionable, or the players that they had the questionable storylines for, are now becoming, like, solid in their roles. Like, Embiid is a solid center. Simmons is a solid point guard.
Is a center? I thought centers didn't exist, Dennis.
I didn't say centers didn't exist. I said Jokic wasn't a center. That's what I said. I said he's a stretch four. You said he's a center. Like, that dude's a stretch. Embiid ain't no stretch four.
He doesn't play like a five.
He doesn't even consider Embiid an NBA player, bro.
True.
He plays soccer. Never
mind. This is a mood argument.
Yeah, this is stupid. They got pieces, is what I'm saying. So yeah, we all agree that Doc brings a culture in there, a winning pedigree that will probably get them, certainly get them past the second round. We'll have them in the bidding for the Eastern Conference finals, depending on who they see, whether it's the Nets or it's either the Nets or the Bucks. They take the Nets, they lose probably in six. They play the Bucks, they probably win in seven. Because if Ben Simmons can't shoot, Giannis can't shoot at all.
Oh, man.
And he don't even have help.
So are we talking 58 to 51 final?
Well, no, because Embiid's out there, so Embiid going to give you 20.
Oh, I'm sorry. 65-58.
Damn. Low-scoring game. Very low score. A lot of blocks. Low-scoring game. Like, a few dunks. You're going to see 20 dunks. All them points are going to be dunks. But, like, it's not going to be a shootout. Well, not true. Tobias is on Philly, so it'll be some shots going. And Seth there. So, I think my prediction, Philly gets the Bucks in the Eastern Conference Finals. They beat them 4-0. Just because of the shooting alone. Like, you got lights out on them. Anybody else want to give a prediction?
It's too early for that.
No, it's not.
It's always too early for that. I'm good on that.
You can be like, you're going to be in an NBA final. You're like, it's too early for the Eastern Conference Finals. Like, it's too early. I don't want to do that shit. All right, let's move on. This is the last subject of this segment, and we're going to switch gears and go to tennis because Serena Williams is I know we don't usually do real-time scores, but she's number 10 in the world, and she's looking like she's about to go to the finals at the Australian Open. And my question to you guys, because she's been plagued with injuries since like 2017, and the birth of her daughter kind of put her off a little bit, so she's been chasing that number 20, that Grand Slam 24 for the last 4 years now. Like, and I don't want to say if she didn't have her baby that she would have got it by now. We don't know because the injuries were still there, but like, She took time away to do her personal stuff, and she's granted that because she gave a lot human. To the sport. Yeah, she's human. She gave a lot to the sport. She gave a lot of time and effort. She's 23 Grand Slams in. She's arguably the greatest tennis player to ever walk this planet, and you have to give her that. Like, you have to give her time to be, like Jay said, a human. My question is,
I'm only human.
Okay. And here we go getting banned. Very good.
All right. Question. Do you guys think that this Australian Open is the one where she wins 24?
I'm not well-versed in the field, but I do know that.
I don't know if I'm qualified to comment on this, but
I don't think there's really anybody else that can
she's gotta hit that,
really dethrone her.
The ball Osaka.
If she's like healthy, there's nobody else that can dethrone her.
My argument has always been.
Some of the players, but
my argument has always been that Serena beats herself. Like, she starts slow.
Right.
And then she has to come back and, you know, come back to it. But in the last 2 years, she's been in more quarterfinals, semifinals, and finals than any other female player combined. Mm-hmm. Like, with injuries and with, like, pulling out of certain competitions. She's pulled out in semifinals. She's pulled out in finals. She's pulled out and she said, I'm physically not able to play up to the standard. I mean, did y'all see, I didn't see y'all the picture of her outfit that she's wearing right now. Y'all see it? Uh-uh. She's she's paying homage to FloJo.
Oh, she got the one leg. She got the one leg leotard. I already know.
But it's kind of modified. Like,
okay.
It's not like boom, boom. It's like, you get a little thigh meat. But it's like out. And, you know, she has been the most intimidating presence in tennis the last 15, 20 years.
Yeah.
Like she's number 10 right now. But those rankings are based on points and how often you play. Anytime you go look at her stats, she's still making a lot of money playing tennis, regardless of whether she's winning or not. She's making money and she's placing well. I guess the question would be like, if she does win Australia Open, how long does she play? Continue to play past 40 at this point? Because Venus is still playing. Venus is winning.
Right.
And she's over 40. I think she will play as long as she can, bro. I don't think she's going to. She loves doing it.
I think it's the same thing with modern medicine, man. We at that point where. I can keep going because, you know, we working on this regularly. So we're good. We're good over here.
They're going to start taking like
baby.
They're going to start taking people's like essences and put them into different bodies. Like that's what it's going to be like. I'm going to play forever because I'm just going to switch bodies. And it's like
playing in exo suits.
Right. So, and she's winning right now. I won't be able to give you guys an update on the score. I imagine because tennis goes pretty fast, especially when Serena's on the court. Like,
she runs like, through shit. But like you said, unless she's beating herself where she's got that lead and then it all crashes and burns. But her matches even still are quick, even with that.
Right. We talking, she averages less than 60 minutes a game, yeah. Not set, game. Right. And right now she's up 6-7, 5-2. So I imagine by the time we come back from break, the game will be over. it's going to be, you know. And with that, we will take a break and come back. And this is Sports and Things.
Hey, this is Trey Ealy. Do you have a hot take or a topic you'd like for us to debate? Just hit us up on Instagram or Twitter. Now back to this week's episode.
And welcome back to Sports and Things, everybody. This segment is going to be a little sad because we lost a few greats this past week. With the sports world, we're going to go with Marty Schottenheimer. He passed away after a long fight with due to Alzheimer's, and he was 77. 21 seasons as a head coach, won 205 games total. Coach here, how many years did he coach here? Like, what?
This one?
Oh yeah, because Snyder got rid of him.
Snyder couldn't take Snyder somebody else him. Doing stuff right.
Sniped him. Pew. Yeah. Like, you know, you're doing too good at this.
You trying to win? Oh no. We don't do that. But he was Kansas City too, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Long time. Cleveland is where he almost won a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And believe it or not, Ernest Biner fumbled.
Ernest Biner. He was number 21 here.
Yep.
I didn't have his jersey, but I was an Ernest Biner fan, bro. Anyway.
We all were. He won us the Super Bowl.
Right.
I mean, before the Super Bowl. Like, ain't because he won me. I like the player, bro. Like, anyway, getting off subject. It's about Marty Schottenheimer. Rest in peace, Marty Schottenheimer. We send our condolences to him and his family. Yeah. You know, it's always sad to lose someone, and he was a great. I don't know. He's not in the Hall of Fame, is he? Should be.
I don't know.
That's good if he's question. Not, he should be. 21 season, 205 games isn't like nothing to kind of like. And a couple of winning teams. So rest in peace, Marty Schottenheimer. We go to music. We lost Mary Wilson, one of the founding members of the Supremes. She was 76. Yeah. And that's, you know, that's always sad as well, because they were talking about getting back together, as Jay said during the break. And you know, it's always kind of bittersweet when you talk around it. You're waiting on a couple people, and it's like, we should have did it. You know.
Yeah.
So we send our condolences.
Go with now.
All right. So we send our condolences out to her family and her legacy too. Like that's one of the main staples of the Motown sound. So we send our condolences out to her and her family. And last but certainly not least, we lost Chick Corea a couple of days ago. And Chick Corea was 79. Yep. And I don't think it specified what his complications were, but you know, he lived a beautiful life.
It was
life.
Cancer, I thought.
Yeah.
Cancer? Okay.
It was cancer.
Chick Corea is one of the jazz giants that we all looked up to, and we all studied, and we all listened to growing up. I can remember listening to countless Return of Forever albums, listening to all that early, the early stuff that he did, stuff he did with Miles, and then, you know, I actually met him. I want to say I met him in 1998 when they used to do master classes at Blues Alley during the day, and like, so they would bring high school kids in at noon, and then the artist that was playing that night would come in, like, kind of straggle in and play a couple songs and then do Q&A's. And I remember going and sitting there, and it was like, yeah, we're gonna play Spain. And I was like, I was playing with a different band. Like, I was playing, it was my I was at Anacostia Senior High School, but I was sitting in with Wilson's Senior High School's jazz band. So they had a whole arrangement they were doing about this song, and I had to read it in real time in front of Chick Corea. And you talk about sweating bullets, bro. It's like, and I never applied the when in doubt layout motto more than any. I'm not even gonna play that. Like, I ain't have a chance to go over there.
Let that space breathe.
It looked like a big ensemble situation. I'm gonna just go ahead and I'm gonna clap with them and play clave or something. I'm not gonna do that. he was super cool. He came in. I remember thinking that Chick Corea was tall, because he looked tall in the videos. But when he walked in, he had to be about 5'6", 5'7", maybe. He had on a Hawaiian shirt. He was like, oh, nice to meet you guys. I'm going to just play some tunes. And he went through, like, Thelonious Monk's, like, catalog. It was nuts. And then he would play a song. And he's like, you guys got any questions? And then you just see a bunch of high school kids, like, like, with these looks like.
No, sir.
The cool thing about it, and I'll let you guys talk. The cool thing about it was the kids, even including myself, knew who he was.
Yeah.
At like 16, 17.
Yeah.
Like, you see this guy walk in, you see the name. You know, when you walk in the Blues Alley, you walk into the alley, you see the name on the marquee.
The marquee.
And like I know, I have those records. Like, I have all those records. And this dude is sitting 2 feet away from me asking me if I have something to ask him. So, you know, the questions went up, and he was really cool. And I think that's one of the cool things about meeting musicians that you idolize when they are cool. Like, and they're not like, I mean, me and Trey had a whole conversation about this earlier offline, when we were talking about people being artists acting like artists, you know, and when artists do not act like artists,
divas.
Right. And he was super cool. It was a really good experience. And it was one of those experiences that kind of like make you want to go home and practice, as opposed to like turn you off from, like, you know, wanting to actually pursue a career in music. So that's my take on Chick. You guys can go. Trey. The flautist.
Wow. Yeah. So I wish John was here, because I could tell him that Chick did include flute in his arrangements. But anyway,
wow. So jaded, man. Good lord.
but yeah, no,
let me pull
man.
Out the world's Chick, smallest violin.
Chick is one of the greatest pianists ever, and he's from that tree, the University of Miles, and all those guys that came out from under Miles became great on their own. Every single one of them, and Chick was no exception. And he's one of the best, you know, so he's a joy to listen to. I love to listen to when they get back together or got back together. You know, the five piece band with all the guys from Miles. You know, you had John McLaughlin and Chick Corea and Kenny Garrett and all these guys together. But yeah, he will be missed. But we are grateful for his gift that God gave him and that we got to experience it. And we still have the recordings to study from. So
exactly.
He won't ever be missed, but he won't be forgotten.
That's the key. That's the key.
We will continue.
He made enough work that his legend will now grow, which is the wonderful part about music. Like, if you weren't a fan before and, you know, you only heard minor stuff, as sad as it is, once you pass, your stock rises.
Yeah.
So he will be missed.
And it's always, go ahead, Trey.
He doesn't have to be in the room for you to transcribe him. So,
right.
You know,
and I'm like, one of the cool things about Chick, and we can move on to Artist of the Week, is the coolness in which, like, you had at one point, you had Returner Forever and you had Weather Report. Like, you had Joe and you had Chick that came out of the School of Miles, basically. Like, Joe and Lenny and Stanley Clark, and then you had you had Wayne Shorter, Joe Zawinul, and Jacko. And it was like they're both coming from the same school of fusion-esque music. Man, but
a lot of them cats came from Miles.
They're approaching it totally different ways, and you can appreciate that about the way they approach the music, you know. And it's like we'll always have that, you know, forever, because music doesn't die. And so we want to send a special condolences out to him and his family, and, you know, thank him for what he did for music and what he contributed as a whole, as a, not just as a musician, but as a human as well. So rest in peace to all those we lost this week. And with that, we'll go into our Artist of the Week. Jay.
I think for me, it's going to be Chick Corea.
All right, Trey.
Yeah.
Chick Corea.
You got to pick a song or something. You can't just say Chick Corea, bro. Like, Chick Corea. Chick
Corea. I'm going to go with Spain, you know.
All right. All right, I'll say Chick too, but I'm gonna do Tupac, because I'm gonna take John's spot too.
Tupac. So,
Chick Corea, but the record that I had as a teenager was the first record I had that came that I got of Returner Forever was the best of Returner Forever, and that came out like 1985, and I listened to that record.
John was 40.
See, mine is Play with Bobby McFerrin.
That was mine. But like, I listened to that record. I listened to that record, and I listened to Weather Report's 8:30 Live for like a year. Like, those two records, and then I kind of got hit and went back into Stanley stuff. And but like those two, it was like the contrast between the two bands that kind of made it for me. But that Best of Returner Forever album was like the best of what they were doing at the time they were doing it. So that's going to be one of my Artists of the Week. And then two, because Mike passed away. We lost Mike a long time ago, but I told you guys last night about what they were doing on Instagram when they were playing the stems to PYT. And at one point, I think it's called the Listening Sessions Live. I think that's what the IG's called. I'll find out for sure. But at what he does it every Wednesday, where he basically is going to play Michael Jackson songs until he runs out of them, broken down part by part. And he broke down all the guitar parts. I didn't know it was that many guitar parts on PYT. It all sounds like one or two people playing. Mm-hmm. It was like seven parts, and it was all Paul Jackson Jr. Mind blown. And then he played Michael's acapellas, like, from the actual recording. And at one point he went to he was like, you guys don't understand what's happening. So they took all the effects off of it, and then he played Michael's acapella from ABC when he was 11. to compare the two. And how meticulous Mike was at 11 manifested itself as a 20-year-old superstar phenom. It was crazy to hear. Like, so rest in peace, Mike. You know, I just had to throw that in there. I'll find out what the actual IG is. If anybody's listening, want to go check it out. It's every Wednesday. He does stuff every day, but he does Michael specifically at like 11 o'clock or on Wednesday nights. But that's the artist of the week. And that's our show. We, you know, we'll be back. John will be back next week. So we wish him, you know, can't say anything. So
yeah. We'll wait for John. Joe Burrow. That's Roe. That's
wow.
It.
Wow.
Yeah.
He's somewhere smoking a cigar.
Right.
On the cover of NCAA football.
Haskins is on the cover of NCAA football.
Oh, he needs to be. That's where.
That's the only place he's going to be.
Wow. All right. So that's our podcast. On behalf of myself, Jay Hill, Trey Ely, and John Lane, you can check us out every Saturday on the Unhinged Sport Network at 12 noon. That's unhingedsportsnetwork.com. You can catch us anywhere you listen to podcasts at any time. You can subscribe. Please subscribe. Check us out. We have Facebook. We have Twitter. We have Instagram. Come follow us. Check us out. Check out the new happenings that we're doing. Shout out to our partnerships with Fanatics.com and Fubo TV. You can check our bios on various sites to see how to get connected with those things as well. It's been real, and we will check you guys next week. Peace.
All right.
Uh-huh.
Free my nine.
Yeah. We got the vibe on deck, bro. Four dope brothers talking sports, so let's go. If you could just imagine some dudes into music get together to talk trash about whose teams is losing. So here we go. Deke Turner, John Lane, Trey Ely, Jay Hill, the MVP, caught in the history. So now what? They got they mics and gizmos. Podcast rapper for DC, what it is, mo. Yeah, we talking sports and things. From rookies who bored to vets who about to get more rings. Plus more things, like a jam session or something. Then we beefing cause our favorite team, Jive like slumming, Jive like pumping. Over podcasts and stereo every O. You want more than that whole hum, so here we go. Yeah, we go from bars to beats to podcast or AstroTurf with balls and cleats like that, y'all. Talking sports and things, talking sports and things. Priest the Nomad up, talking sports and things. We're talking sports and things. D Turner, John Lane, talking sports and things. Baby, we're talking sports and things. Trey Ely, Jay Hill, talking sports and things. Talking sports and things. Yeah, DC, baby.
Thanks for listening to Sports and Things featuring John Lane, Trey Ely, Jay Hill, and Dennis Turner. Be sure to follow and subscribe for our upcoming episodes. You can also reach the team on Instagram at SportsandThingz and on Twitter at IZSportz.
Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.